Welcome to the 1-0 podcast, hosted by Joe Cook and Brad Kellner. The 1-0 podcast is part of the Everyone Gets a Trophy podcast channel, and today we will discuss Brad and I's biggest takeaways from Steve Sarkisian's introductory press conference and first couple days on the job. We'll also get into his reported staff hires, including a few recent ones that are huge additions to the Longhorns' recruiting efforts within the state. And then touch on any other areas of the hire before getting into a little bit of NBA basketball. Listen to both our show and the Everyone Gets a Trophy podcast hosted by Kevin Dunn and Paul Wadlington. Subscribe to our channel wherever you get your podcasts. And please leave a review to let us know what you'd like to hear us talk about. If you'd like to contact us directly, send emails at everyonegetsatrophy@gmail.com. That's everyonegetsatrophy@gmail.com. And of course, the 1-0 podcast would not be possible without following sponsors.
Audio visual consultations, give them a call, 512-255-8678 to get the home TV setup of your dreams. The Sark era is officially upon us in Austin. Make sure you have your TV setup done right by the time next football season rolls around so you can watch the rebirth of Longhorn football with that awesome TV setup in the comfort of your own home. And the 1-0 podcast is also brought to you by Altstadt Brewery, Altstadt Beer. It is German beer made here and the best beer that you can find all across the state of Texas. Pick up a six-pack wherever you shop for beer. It's the official beer of the 1-0 podcast. It should be the official beer of you as well. It's Altstadt Beer. No impurities, no regrets.
Texas has a new head coach. He was introduced the other day via Zoom with some dignitaries, at least from Texas football, like Colt McCoy, Michael Huff, Vince Young, all in the room there with them, and kind of discussed the whole search and whole process starting from this point. Is that it wasn't just, you know, Chris Del Conte, the athletic director, introducing him. He had third billing. You had the UT Board of Regents chairman and Kevin Eltife coming down from the ivory tower to help with the football coaching search. You had UT president Jay Hartzell coming down from the tower to help with the search. And then, of course, you had Del Conte. So I guess kind of quick takeaway before we even get into the Sarkisian stuff is the Texas stuff, and that, you know, all three of these guys had their hand in the process, tried to make things happen, and that's going all the way back even to the Urban Meyer search. And all three, and I posted this over on Inside Texas, we kind of jokingly called them the Trilateral Commission. All three of these guys are putting their names onto this hire. And they seem very, very proud of their work, and at this point, rightfully so.
Yeah, no doubt about it. It was kind of weird to me that Kevin Eltife was the first person who spoke at Sark's introductory press conference a couple of days ago, right? I figured President Hartzell would get the first word, then Chris Del Conte, and maybe Kevin Eltife would get a couple of words in there, but the fact that he opened up the press conference goes to your point. He really put his name and the entirety of the Board of Regents' name behind this Steve Sarkisian hire, and they are pretty proud of their work, and so far it looks good. I mean, obviously we'll wait and see what happens in the fall. That's going to determine whether or not this thing is a success. But they are all putting their names behind it. And like you said, they do feel pretty accomplished with what they've been able to pull off.
So outside of the process part of it and the leadership part of it, now Texas has a new head coach. And, you know, of the 45 minutes of that press conference, he definitely got the most airtime, even though the Trilateral Commission, as we say, let it off. So basically, you know, It's always good to win the press conference. It doesn't really add to his record, but, you know, winning the press conference is a lot better than losing the press conference. And I'm not sure, you know, I'm kind of struggling to remember Charlie Strong's introduction. I was there for Tom Herman's introduction. And, you know, I don't remember much about Charlie's. I thought that Tom's was pretty run of the mill, but I don't remember it being as well-received, not just at Texas and by the fan base, but as well-received nationally as it seems to be. And that's even amid the whole storyline of, you know, why is Texas paying, you know, tens of million dollars in a pandemic with all these other monetary and financial issues affecting not just the Texas athletic department, but the, you know, athletic departments around the country. That got some mention, but I think most of the mention so far has been, wow, this is a great, you know, redemptive arc for Steve Sarkisian. And, you know, he's hit all the big media stops. He was on Scott Van Pelt last night. I think he was on The Herd today. You know, he's putting his name out there and trying to appeal to everybody. And it kind of seems like that appeal is working.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And first of all, I want to mention that, you know, it's not really Texas paying the $15 million buyout to Tom Herman and the $9 million buyout to the rest of his staff and paying Steve Sarkisian to be here, right? I've seen a lot of national guys kind of say, oh, it's a public university and, oh, all the taxpayer money is going to this. During a pandemic, the taxpayer money for all the hardworking Texans is going to Texas firing another football coach and bringing in another guy to hopefully get this program back on track. No, it's the booster money. It's the big money donor money that is paying for all of this. And look, while the economy has definitely taken a hit, Joe, there are plenty of people out there who have done well over the last calendar year or so. So that's where this money is coming in, and it's good. I mean, you love that if you're Texas, and I think that support, that financial backing from the big money donors is more important than ever before, because normally the university's making a ton of money, right? But because of the pandemic and because of everything that happened last year, the university is not making the normal amount of money. Hell, they're losing money right now. So they need that backing from the big money donors and boosters more than ever before. And we know how much they care about football. So a lot of people have complained like, ah, they're too involved. No, you want that support, and you really need that support during this pandemic to make sure that you can get your football program turned around, because the football program also pays for the rest of the university, right? So it's important to get this thing right, and it's good that the financial backing is there from those guys. Now, to your point, yes, Sark to this point has done everything right. Once again, everyone is in wait-and-see mode, and you should be in wait-and-see mode to see what happens in September against Louisiana, and obviously over the course of the 2021 season. But the staff that he's reportedly putting together sounds good. He said just about everything right at his press conference a couple of days ago. And as you mentioned, he's kind of doing the national media tour. Now, his media tour won't be complete until he comes on the triple option with RBKD. Let me say that right there. But no, he seemingly has pressed every right button to this point. It seems like he has control over the situation. And Joe, I think a large part of that has to do with, of course, the guys that he's worked with in the past, and Nick Saban and Pete Carroll, but also the fact that this is his third rodeo, right? He's done this a couple of times before at Washington and USC. So he's kind of been through the gamut. He knows what the first few days of a new job are like, and I think that's a good thing. I think he's handled it just about as well as you possibly could at this point.
So outside of the talk Sark has said over his, you know, recent few days in Austin, I'm kind of wondering from that, whether that introductory press conference, whether it was talking with Craig Way on the horn, you know, wherever it's been, what was one thing that Sarkisian said that really stood out to you? What kind of let off the, oh, okay, I'm liking that when you heard it from him?
Yeah, I mean, he said the obvious stuff, right? He mentioned DKR. He pled to the Texas high school football coaches and said, hey, this is your program, and I want to build strong relationships with you. He talked about the importance of the former players and making sure they're a part of this thing as well. He repeatedly said the great state of Texas. I mean, he did everything that you're supposed to do. But in terms of what really stood out, there were a couple of things. And I know you wrote a pretty good article about this on Inside Texas the other day. Maybe my favorite quote from Steve Sarkisian was, quote, this isn't a destination day for me, end quote. And I feel like for a lot of guys, whether it's coaches or players, when they get to Texas, they kind of feel like they made it, right? I mean, it's a big deal becoming the head coach at the University of Texas. It is a big deal getting a scholarship to play football at the University of Texas. And for a lot of guys, that's like a life goal. That's like a culmination of success. And hey, I made it, I'm here, and it's all good. Now, this is an opportunity day, like Sark said, right? This, I got to work. And he talked about working over and over and over again. So I loved hearing that. And I also just loved the authenticity we got from Steve Sarkisian throughout that press conference on Tuesday, right? He just was really, really genuine. And he talked about the importance of relationships. And I think it was Bobby Burton over at Inside Texas. I'll give him some credit for this. He talked about the importance of that in today's age of college football, because players are looking out for themselves more than ever before. And they should, right? Student athletes, NCAA athletes have not been given a whole lot over the years. They're still not getting as much as they should, but they're finally starting to grasp some of their power. And a lot of that has to do with the transfer portal. And now we're about to have this one-time transfer rule that, you know, gives student athletes more power than they've ever had. You've got to build authentic, genuine relationships with your players, because if they feel like you don't have their best interest in mind, they're going to leave. They're going to transfer, they're going to opt out, they're going to go to the draft early. Like, they are going to leave your team. So relationships are important, and we found out over the years that Tom Herman was not great at that, right? Whether it was with players, the administration, big money donors, that was something Tom Herman failed at. Sark, it seems like he realizes the importance of building genuine, authentic relationships with people and being open, too. And I really, really loved that. That was a recurring theme we got from Sark on Tuesday, and that was one of my biggest takeaways.
Yeah, and that kind of dovetails with what I'm thinking. Obviously, your first impression wasn't really anything football-related or X's and O's related. It was person-related, and, you know, you have to do that, or else, like you mentioned, these players, they don't want to play for you. I think we've seen that play out, you know, a handful of occasions at Texas in this past decade. And so you have to make sure that, you know, they aren't just X's and O's to you. You have to, you know, put, you know, those guys and put, you know, your relationship with them and put, you know, all that together so they will go out and play for you. So That was the big one for you. Obviously, the one for me was he, you know, you talked about how he touched all the high notes of Texas history and stuff like that. One of those was that sign. He mentioned he, you know, walked in and saw the sign saying, "I won't the winning tradition of the University of Texas will not be entrusted to the timid or the weak." And, you know, that I don't know if that is actually a UT original. You know, a bunch of different schools have "Play Like a Champion" today in their locker room. I'm sure a bunch of different schools have that in their locker room, but I don't know if Texas holds similar Notre Dame status to that line. But still, that is a prominent phrase that's been around the Texas, you know, locker rooms of all sports. I think even baseball has it as well. And he said that really struck him because, you know, he talked about his personal life struggles and, you know, being terminated by USC and having to fight and literally, you know, crawl back into the good graces of the coaching profession. And he said, you know, "I couldn't do that if I were timid. I couldn't do that if I were weak." And, you know, of course, that has application to his personal life, but it also has application to his professional life. You know, he even mentioned he had some other opportunities. And I think, you know, Auburn right down the road was really interested in him. He didn't entertain it. And then he goes to Texas, you know, a program that has kind of wandered in the wilderness for the past 10 years, but has a lot of resources available to it. And, you know, you have to be aggressive. You have to be a certain kind of person to want to take on the Texas job. And he acknowledged he can't be timid or he can't be weak going through this. This is not a time to, you know, fully change who he is. This is a time to use, and I think he made this point as well, use, you know, who he is and what allowed him to get to this point for Texas' benefit. So I do think it's kind of notable that both of us, our first things off the top weren't even anything, you know, football related. It was people and interpersonal connections related, that type of thing. And, you know, that's, like you mentioned, that seemed to be, or at least over the last year of his tenure, a minor weak point. Even a major weak point for Tom Herman.
Yeah, look, let's be honest. The best thing Sark did this week, or at least has done this week to this point, is the performance Alabama had in the national championship game on Monday night, right? I mean, that was the best marketing ever for Texas. And you saw current players and you saw prospective recruits taking to social media talking about how exciting it was to watch Steve Sarkisian's offense go to work. Now, yes, we all know that Texas does not have the talent that Alabama has at this moment. But, man, there was a major schematic advantage that Alabama had over Ohio State. And that's something that we did not see consistently enough from Tom Herman, right? I mean, Texas, we know Texas has better talent than anybody in this conference outside of Oklahoma. And look, the talent difference between Texas and Oklahoma is minimal. I mean, you could argue that Texas has more talent. At least they've recruited better than Oklahoma over the last few years. But the schematic advantage has not been there for the Longhorns, and that's why, you know, inferior opponents on paper have been able to play with and even beat Texas from time to time. Just watching what Sark's offense did on Monday, putting up 50-plus against a really, really talented Ohio State defense, like, that was the best marketing ever for Texas, and that was huge. Huge to get folks excited about Steve Sarkisian coming to Austin. Like, that 24-hour stretch, Joe, from the national title game to the introductory press conference Tuesday afternoon, that was pretty damn cool to see, and it had to excite you at least a little bit if you're a Longhorn fan.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, after watching Tom Herman, you know, he a very adept offensive mind. I mean, for all his flaws, I think that we saw that Tom Herman is pretty good at offense. He is. He led some good offenses at Texas, called good offenses at Texas. So he's got an offensive, or he had an offensive track record and maintained it at Texas. But what the difference between the two, as far as stuff like design, seems night and day. You know, if you took Tom Herman and basically told him, hey, I feel like Tom Herman would really understand how to make an offense go with a fullback and two tight ends on there every down. You know, I think a lot of the stuff that he ran is, you know, football concepts pretty much, you know, accepted by and used by everybody. You know, it's kind of the boilerplate passing concepts. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, we've seen other teams use that to success. But when you don't have the talent to allow you to, you know, keep defenses on their heels, or you don't develop and deploy that talent in a way to keep defenses on their heels, kind of going back to that point you talk about, it can kind of look, you know, pretty stale. You know, I had somebody call four verts a pretty simple play, the Tom Herman special, to me one time. So you see that, and then you watch that national championship game, and granted, you know, despite wearing the same number and maybe looking kind of similar, I don't think Josh Moore is at a Devontae Smith level yet. But you can see how, like, he would constantly be freeing up Smith to make plays. And that wasn't something that happened at Texas. Freeing up somebody to make plays at Texas normally meant throwing him a bubble screen, or it normally meant throwing him a hitch. It didn't mean getting them open, getting them moving with motion in space at any receiver position, say for that slot receiver position. So what Steve Sarkisian's bringing, that, like you mentioned, it was a great advertising during that national title game. He's not running these just plain Jane concepts. No. He's doing some stuff that is deceptive to the opposing defense. Heck, probably a little bit deceptive to the officials as well. And is making use of it with the best players.
Yeah.
Like you mentioned, he's got to go get those best players. But we're seeing stuff that, you know, is literally, and this is something, a point of pride that he mentioned in his press conference. So he wants to stay on the cutting edge of offense. And that's kind of where he's lived his whole career, whether it be with Lavelle Edwards or Pete Carroll, even, you know, with Nick Saban. He wants to stay there. And that performance on Monday night was as good of an indication that that's something he can replicate with the schematically at Texas.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it last week, Joe. Like, this guy was Sean McVay before Sean McVay. I mean, he was viewed as an offensive mastermind in his early 30s, and he got offered an NFL head coaching job at the age of 32. Like, this guy is a really, really damn good offensive mind. Obviously had some issues in his past off the field that sort of derailed his coaching career a little bit. But this guy knows offense. He knows ball. And we saw that on Monday night. And look, Ohio State's defensive game plan was atrocious. I mean, it was effing terrible, Joe. Like, playing four linebackers against that offense, the most efficient passing offense in the history of college football. Like, I know Najee Harris is a beast, but selling out to stop the run when you've got Mac Jones and Devontae Smith and Jalen Waddle and John Mechie in that passing game, that was terrible. But how many times did you watch Alabama this year, and really over the last 2 years, and you just see Devontae Smith, or last year, Jerry Jeudy, or Henry Ruggs, or Jalen Waddle wide open? Wide open. That's because Steve Sarkisian schemes those guys open, right? Especially this year, right? Judy's gone, Ruggs is gone, Waddle's gone for most of the year. Devontae Smith, everybody knew Bama wanted to get that guy the ball. And yet time and time again, that dude would find himself wide open with nothing but green grass around him. That is Sark right there. So look, yeah, Texas does not have a Devontae Smith, but there is some talent at the wide receiver position with Whittington, with Jake Smith. Troy O'Meary seemed like the real deal before he got hurt last year. You brought up Joshua Moore. Like, there is some talent on the outside. You could scheme those guys open a little bit better than Texas has done over the past couple of years, then those guys have a chance to be really, really good players, and that should excite you the most about what Sark has done, right? What he does with quarterbacks, he develops quarterbacks, he's worked with so many really, really good ones, and obviously his ability to get guys open and make things easier on his quarterback. That stuff, we saw it a bunch over the last 2 years, and hopefully it follows Sark to Austin, and there's really no reason to think that it won't.
Yeah, and you know that performance on Monday night had immediate, you know, positive effects for Texas when they received we can talk about this as well. Andre Coleman, a wide receivers coach who appears to be staying on with Sarkisian, you know, it had immediate positive effects for Texas when Armani Winfield, 2022 receiver from Louisville up in the DFW area, made the call, and I think that was even before Steve Sarkisian's introductory press conference mm-hmm. that happened. So Texas landed a commitment from a DFW area wide receiver in the class of 2022 before Sarkisian had even, you know, been formally introduced. That kind of says a lot about the impact that he has already made and like you said, what people see in that offense and want to be a part of that offense and see that, you know, they can get schemed open, get open right away, and that's going to have a positive benefit. We've already seen, and Steve Sarkisian mentioned this during his press conference, that you know he really does enjoy recruiting. He likes to go through that process, and that's going to be an important thing for him to do over these next few months, especially with the new coach bump that he should get. Mm-hmm. But that offensive firepower that he showcased at Alabama, that schematic ability that he showcased at Alabama on his last day on the job there, already has, you know, positive effects for the Longhorns.
Yeah, that's what you want right there, right? I mean, Armani Winfield had offers from everywhere, Oklahoma, A&M, Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State. I think a lot of people assumed he was going to commit to Ohio State, and Texas was able to lure him in even before Sark had his introductory press conference. So, yeah, no, it's been a really, really good week for Steve Sarkisian, and hopefully he can ride that momentum. And look, National Signing Day, like the original National Signing Day, is 3 weeks away. So Sark still has an opportunity to close out relatively strong on this 2021 class. We know L.J. Johnson is still out there, the number one running back in the state of Texas. Feels like a Texas A&M battle for that guy. There's a few other names that Texas would definitely like to bring in for the class of 2021. So, yeah, you'd love to ride that new coach smell. I heard Justin Wells, your cohort, on with Chad and Trey yesterday, talking about that new coach smell, sort of like a new car smell or a new shoe smell. You got to ride that as long as you possibly can if you're Texas, and hopefully that pays dividends on the recruiting trail and with his coaching staff that Sark's trying to put together.
Yeah, let's talk about the coaching staff a little bit. Obviously, with the two holdovers from Tom Herman's staff that will be remaining with Steve Sarkisian, at least indicated by some of their social media presence during the national title game, and like we mentioned, Winfield commitment. Wide receivers coach Andre Coleman and running backs coach Stan Drayton. With Stan Drayton, a lot of his presence definitely has to do with recruiting. I mean, Bijan Robinson is on the roster. Keontae Ingram's on the roster. And then also with, you know, development. I mean, Roschon Johnson was a quarterback, and although he ran a significant amount at Port Neches Groves, it was quarterback running. It was it wasn't as intricate as, you know, it may seem just for a running back. So Stan Drayton, though not a volume recruiter like a lot of people may have anticipated him being, still a very effective recruiter when it comes to running backs. And very effective when it comes to developing those running backs. But on the flip side, you've got Andre Coleman, who may have been put into a pretty tight spot, you know, having to develop relationships digitally, with some of the top recruits within the state of Texas for the, you know, Texas program in the condition that it was last year. But Sarkisian chose to keep him around. There were some other names floated throughout the search, including, you know, Wiggins from Alabama, his current wide receiver coach at Alabama. I think even P. Martin's name popped up a couple times. Simmons from Oklahoma, his name even popped up. But ultimately, Steve Sarkisian made the decision to stick with Andre Coleman. So for both of those guys, two offensive assistants who we know will be sticking around. What's your reaction to that? I kind of feel like, you know, with Drayton, it makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. I think with Coleman, it is definitely justified, but I don't think it's going to be a move that has Texas fans celebrating a ton. And kind of this is one of those first trust Sark moments of his tenure.
Yeah, no, I'm cool with Stan Drayton sticking around, right? He's done good things at Texas. He had a proven track record before Texas. He's worked with really good running backs in the National Football League. So it makes sense to keep him around. Plus, you don't want to mess with Bijan Robinson's development. I mean, the only thing you want to mess with Bijan is the number of carries he gets, right? You want him to be getting twice as many carries next year as he got this past year under Tom Herman. But whatever that relationship was appeared to work this past season. Stan Drayton's done a phenomenal job both in recruiting and in development. So I'm cool with that. Most Longhorn fans wanted him to stick around, and I agree. Andre Coleman, I don't feel great about this hire at all. I really don't, and I hope he proves me wrong, right? I hope this thing ends up working out, and I hope it ends up paying more dividends than just getting one wide receiver for next year's recruiting class. I don't mean to, like, poo-poo recruiting. Obviously, that's incredibly important. Y'all know how I feel about that. But these wide receivers were bad last year, Joe. They were bad, and it was recurring problems with this wide receiver core. They could not get off bump and run coverage all year long. That was an issue from week one to the last week of the season. They could not get off bump and run coverage, even though they had size advantages over just about every secondary they went up against this year. The wide receivers underperformed heavily this season. Now, a lot of that might have to do with Tom Herman, right? I mean, Tom Herman, a former wide receiver, apparently he gets involved with wide receiver coaching a lot. And, you know, also Tom Herman's offense just might have not been good enough. He wasn't scheming guys open as well as he should have. I think that's well documented to this point. But, man, I did not see a lot from Andre Coleman this past year that makes me really, really confident that he's the best man for the job. You know, looking at some of the other candidates you mentioned, right? Alabama's wide receivers coach. Look at Bama's wide receivers. One of them just won the damn Heisman Trophy. First receiver to win that in 30 years. You had Oklahoma's wide receiver coach. I mean, how many wide receivers has Oklahoma sent to the league under Simmons over the last few years? I mean, those guys are always really, really good at that position. T. Martin, former offensive coordinator. Like, that guy is a great offensive mind. You know he'd be a really, really good recruiter as well. Like, all of those guys have more skins on the wall than Andre Coleman. And maybe Andre Coleman can be a good coach, but Joe, I did not see it this past season. So I was a little bit disappointed when I saw Andre Coleman tweet out the hashtag all gas, no brakes mantra of Steve Sarkisian during the national title game on Monday night, because I thought there was a good chance he was going to be gone just based off the rumors I had heard, and he's going to be staying. So once again, hopefully he turns it around. I don't mean to close the book on him or anything after just 1 year, but it was not a very good first impression for Andre Coleman here in Austin.
Yeah, remember last year he was promoted by Tom Herman with a lot of the players really voicing their hope that that would happen.
Yep.
Because of the way that he handled not only that wide receiver room, maybe a little bit better than the guys he was helping as a quality control guy. So there's definitely some appreciation of what Coleman was doing within the building. But I think you're right. You there still has to be some signs that this is a guy who can develop. Like, that was what he was billed as over and over and over by Tom Herman, by people within the program. Like, this is a developer. This is the guy who's going to get these players and teach them. And that, you know, wasn't completely evident last year. So I think your skepticism regarding Coleman is very, very valid. And It's something, like I mentioned, that's kind of the first Trust Sarkisian moment that he is putting forward to the fan base. As far as other offensive coaches, with Steve Sarkisian calling plays and making all indications that he'll continue to call plays, the offensive coordinator hire is not super important, but it's definitely still important. You know, it's surrounding Sarkisian with guys who will, you know, make sure that when he's overseeing the entire program and in practice, he can, you know, it's guys he can trust to oversee the other, that side of the ball. And the two main ones, including what seems to be the announced offensive coordinator hire, is, you know, Alabama offensive line coach, not announced, but reported, is Alabama offensive line coach Kyle Flood. And then also an Alabama quality control coach named Austin Milwee, who will be making his way to Texas, has made his way to Texas, and will be coaching the quarterback. So I don't know if that's going to be a co-OC operation. I think it'll be Kyle Flood maybe retaining that title solely just because it will be a step up for him from his title at Alabama. And we can look at his recruiting chops and see that he helped pull the Brockenmeyers to Texas, mm-hmm. and helped pull not only pull all these offensive linemen that are going to be making their way to the NFL, but coach them. And I think that Kyle Flood probably is one of the clearest upgrades at position coaches that Steve Sarkisian made from the Tom Herman staff.
Yeah, agreed 100%. I mean, Herb Hand, people have been calling for his job over the last couple of seasons here in Austin. I mean, recruiting had taken a huge backseat, and development obviously was a big, big issue. I mean, this offensive line underperformed the last two seasons. So you really wanted to get the offensive line coach higher right, and Kyle Flood has done phenomenal things at Alabama over the last couple of years. And look, he's been an offensive line coach slash an offensive coach for pretty much two decades. He's also been a head coach before, right? I love being able to bring in former head coaches at college football programs to be just position coaches or coordinators. Now, I know Rutgers is not the biggest name college football program out there, but look, Chris Ash was the head coach at Rutgers after Kyle Flood. Kyle Flood actually was better at Rutgers if you look at their win-loss record, and Chris Ash was great as a defensive coordinator last year, and everybody, or at least a lot of people, kind of want Chris Ash to stick around as the defensive coordinator for this football team moving forward. We'll get to that here in a second, but Kyle Flood is really, really good at his craft. The Joe Moore Award this year was given to Alabama, the best offensive line in college football. He's an ace recruiter by all accounts. You talked about the Brockenmeyers. He's been able to lure some big-time dudes into Alabama and obviously has been able to help develop them into Sunday players as well. And look, comfort hires sometimes scare me, right? I mean, with Charlie Strong and with Tom Herman, they scared me a little bit. And they didn't work out, right? And look, those guys were coming from Louisville and from the University of Houston. But when your comfort hires are from Alabama and your comfort hires are coming from guys who coached the most efficient offense in college football history, I think you should feel okay about that if you're a Texas fan, right? You don't want to break that up. You don't want to break that coaching staff up. You want as many guys who are responsible for Alabama's amazing offense this past season to be here in Austin to hopefully replicate or at least come close to replicating that amazing offense here in Austin. So, yeah, Kyle Flood, he seemingly checks every single box for what you're looking for in an offensive line coach. Some people will see the offensive coordinator title, Joe, like you said, and get a little bit worried. But look, ultimately, Steve Sarkisian is the offensive coordinator for this football team. He's going to be calling the plays for this football team as well. So that was the only way you were probably going to lure Kyle Flood away from Tuscaloosa, is by giving him more money and an upgrade in title as well. And I'm perfectly fine with Sark doing that. I think this is a big-time get for Texas.
Yeah, one other thing about Flood, you mentioned the head coaching aspect at Rutgers. He succeeded, what's his name? Shiano. Greg Shiano. Mm-hmm. When Shiano left for the NFL, I think Flood took over up in New Jersey for him. So this is a guy who, you know, was well respected by a guy who is, you know, back at Rutgers, but shot his way up to the NFL through Rutgers through the football ranks. So that stands out to me. Also, this is a guy, you mentioned the his guys aspect. This guy's been with Steve Sarkisian for the past few years. He was the Falcons. He was an assistant offensive line coach for the Falcons in 17 and 18, and then he followed Sarkisian to Alabama to be the Tide's offensive line coach. So, I echo everything that you mentioned, and I think that having head coaching experience on your staff is always going to help. Tom Herman had some, but they were as analysts, and then, you know, counting Chris Ash, that was the one. Mm-hmm. This staff's being put together with some former head coaches being full-fledged on-field assistants. What about Austin Milwee? Not a whole lot known about the guy, but this is the guy that Steve Sarkisian is trusting to be his quarterback's coach when, like I mentioned, he's overlooking the whole program. And I know we're wary of comfort hires. You just mentioned that. And while this may be a little bit of a comfortable hire, it's also an opportunity for, you know, Austin Milwee to make a big jump from analyst to quarterback's coach. But this is another, and more positive light, I think, maybe than the Coleman decision, another trust Sarkisian moment when it comes to hiring a staff.
Is it A.J. Milwee or Austin Milwee? Those are the same person, right?
I think as long as they've got that certain particular hairstyle.
Okay, just making sure, because I've heard both names mentioned, and I was like 99% sure that's the same guy, but just wanted to make sure they're not brothers or something, and we're getting one and not getting the other one. It's another one of those things. Look, I mean, I know Milwee was just an analyst at Alabama last year, but he's been an offensive coordinator at the collegiate level before, and this goes back to what I said a couple of minutes ago. Like, you want as many guys who were responsible, even if they had a really small role, you want as many guys responsible for that Alabama offense that we just saw on Monday night and over the course of the 2020 season to follow Sark to Austin, right? I mean, if Sark trusts this guy, then I think you should trust him too. And we talked about this last week. Look, Bama was willing, they were reportedly willing to name Steve Sarkisian the coach in waiting, right? After Nick Saban retired, they were willing to say, Sark is our next guy. He's our next head coach. We're going to hand him the keys to the kingdom. And I assume Sark would have kept Milwee on staff there, too. So, no, I trust this, man. I don't know a ton about A.J. Milwee. I've looked at his Wikipedia page, and I know he's been an offensive coordinator, as I mentioned, but he's learned from some great guys. And once again, I mean, you don't want to mess with what Sark has going on offense.
Completely agree. And, you know, we'll get to see how he relates not only with current players, but also he's going to be part of the group that will recruit any number of high-profile 2022 quarterbacks. And there's definitely a high-profile 2022 quarterback within Texas. There are plenty of good ones, but there's one that stands out. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously that'll be a group effort, but it'll be an effort that he'll have a significant part in with trying to lure Quinn Ewers back into the Texas fold. Anything else on the offensive side, or if we want to start talking about the mystery that is searching for Texas defensive coordinator?
Nah, let's go to defense, because that is a mystery, and I think that's the most important hire Sark has to make.
Yep, completely agree. So at this point on 2:15 on January 14th, still not quite sure who the defensive coordinator is going to be. I think the three names that seem to be most commonly associated with this Texas search are Alabama defensive coordinator Pete Golding, Mississippi State defensive coordinator Zach Arnett, and then I think Chris Ash is the, you know, I don't think he's being he's a top option, but because of his status as the currently the Texas defensive coordinator, he's definitely an option there available for Steve Sarkisian. So we kind of know what's going on with Chris Ash. We've seen his defense. We've seen his ability to recruit decently well this year, despite, you know, Texas's struggles against Iowa State, Oklahoma, and TCU. But, you know, what about these other two guys who are either with Steve Sarkisian at Alabama or faced Steve Sarkisian at Mississippi State? What are your thoughts on the seemingly two big names that have moved to the front of the Texas defensive coordinator search.
Yeah, these names aren't huge to me, right? And, I mean, as soon as Steve Sarkisian was hired, there were some big names that were thrown around, right? I mean, you saw Dan Quinn's name mentioned for a little bit. Will Muschamp's name was mentioned for a little bit. Barry Odom's name was mentioned for a while as well. All of those guys really, really excited me as a Texas fan, but they all turned down the job, or they took other jobs, probably a better way to describe it. Chris Ash, like Chris Ash did great things with his defense last year. They got better as the season progressed. The tackling issue got better as the season went along. And I saw a lot that I really, really liked from this Texas defense. And look, a huge part of the problem why Texas is in the situation that it's been in is because they've had so much coaching turnover, not just with head coaches, but with coordinators and position coaches as well. Like, you would like to be able to keep some coaches around for more than a year at a time. And ideally, you know, it's a good thing when, okay, the defensive personnel knows the scheme already, right? They know everything. They know their defensive coordinator. They know what they're supposed to do on that side of the football. They don't have to learn something completely, completely different. That is ideal. You want to have that year in and year out. So I would be perfectly fine with Chris Ash staying, but his defensive philosophy, I don't think it necessarily fits with what Sark is looking for just based on the press conference we got from Sark on Tuesday. I think it was actually the one-on-one conversation that Sark had with Craig Way after the press conference was over. He was talking about being attacking, right? Attacking in all three phases, offense, defense, and special teams. And Chris Ash's defense isn't really attack heavy. Now, they don't blitz a whole lot. They don't put a ton of pressure on opposing offenses, right? I mean, they're smart, they're stable, they keep things in front of them, they don't give up too many big plays, they do a lot of good things, but I don't know, just based off that one answer, maybe I'm reading too much into that one answer, but I don't know if Chris Ash's philosophy fits exactly what Steve Sarkisian wants to do. And honestly, I think if it did, Ash would have already been announced as this team's DC moving forward. So, you know, you look at Pete Golding, look, Alabama's defense this past season was not great. Offenses are getting a lot better, right? The SEC is finally copying what the Big 12 has done for years, and they're going more up-tempo, and you're seeing more spread, and you're seeing more air raid in that conference. And we know that's a lot harder to defend against. But, you know, he's worked at Alabama. Nick Saban, trust him. He's learned from Nick Saban as well, so I think that's got to be a pretty good sign. And then Zach Arnett's an interesting one for me, Joe. He's really young. I think he's 34. And he was at Mississippi State last year, and the Bulldogs' defense was pretty good. They were much better than where they were in 2019 before he took that job. But, yeah, I don't know too much about him. I mean, he seems like a fast riser. LSU interviewed him. Oregon apparently wants to interview him as well. So he's getting a lot of looks from around the country, and he might be the next big thing. But I just don't really know enough about him. I don't know if his track record is proven enough for me to feel like that is going to be a sure thing hire if he got the Texas job.
Yeah, the thing about Chris Ash, and I get your point, is, you know, if Steve Sarkisian planned on keeping Chris Ash, probably wouldn't have reportedly gotten rid of Jay Valai or Coleman Hustler, or basically, you know, most of that defensive staff. Yeah. I think that if there was going to be a chance of him sticking around, a strong chance, you would have seen a few more of those guys retained. So at this point, it kind of makes it seem like it's down to Arnett and Golding. And I understand the hesitation on Golding. You know, a lot of the hesitations about Steve Sarkisian, at least on offense, are, well, what's going to happen when you get Texas players and not Alabama players? And at this point, I think people are more trusting his track record at USC, Washington, the NFL, Alabama, all the different places in that regard. Pete Golding does not have that. He was a guy that was snatched by Nick Saban from UTSA, I believe, and he was a popular candidate. I think even Oklahoma, before they settled with or decided to take Alex Grinch, had Golding as a possibility. I think that it's the big question with Golding is, you know, what part of it is Golding, and then what part of it may be Saban,
yeah,
and then what part of it may be just the Alabama players. As far as Zach Arnett goes, he runs a 3-3-5 defense that did a pretty solid job in the SEC this year. And it kind of shows that despite being the air raid originator one of the originals, the godfather of the air raid, I guess, that Mike Leach has done a pretty good job identifying defensive coordinators. Now with Arnett, it kind of seems like there's some, you know, not on-field hesitations and nothing nefarious, but some off-field stuff like his contract, maybe the amount of control he wants to have in a program. And, you know, I think if LSU really wanted him and agreed with everything that he had put forth in that interview, probably would be the Tigers' defensive coordinator right now. Mm-hmm. So, but, you know, this still is a process going forward that, you know, maybe another name pops up. But, hey, the time is of the essence at this point when it comes to a defensive coordinator hire. It's not super pressing, but the longer that these, you know, 2021 recruits that you may be trying to finish up and land in this class, and as long as these 2022 recruits who have all these longstanding relationships already with Texas A&M coaches under Jimbo Fisher, with Oklahoma coaches under Lincoln Riley, with a handful of LSU coaches under Ed Ogeron, you're kind of behind there. Yeah. So I think, you know, time is a little bit of the essence for recruiting as far as a defensive coordinator hire goes. And like we mentioned, it's got to be the right one. You don't want to lose all the momentum you had from big years from people like DeMarvin Overshown, from solid appearances from players like Jaron Thompson. You got to make sure that those guys are still on their upper ascendancy. It's still, you know, hard to see from this group who will make that, make sure is a higher chance of making that continue. But at the same time, you can still see some pretty good competency, some results from these two defensive hires, and think that even though they may not be, you know, out of the park home runs, they're still solid base hits. And, you know, with Texas and Steve Sarkisian and the way the Big 12 goes, maybe you just got to try and limit points as best you can and keep them out of the end zone at the expense of yards. So,
yeah. If you're scoring 50 points a game, then, you know, you don't need to have the most elite defense in the world, right?
Right. Well, and the other thing, and I found this kind of funny, nobody calls their defenses defensive. They're all attacking defenses. They're all aggressive defenses. Mm. Nobody wants their defenses to be very defensive. But, you know, maybe that's just a hair split from me. Anything else on the assistant coaching hires? I know we got just a couple minutes left and wanted to touch on a very, very near and dear subject to me and probably one you're laughing watching from afar. But anything else with the Texas assistant coaching hires with Steve Sarkisian?
Yeah, you might have mentioned this a couple of minutes ago, and if you did, I'm sorry, but you're way more in the know than I am, right? I mean, your crew at Inside Texas, you guys have been all over everything from day one, and you guys have done phenomenal in terms of reporting these coaching hires. But a couple of names, one of them that's been there for a while, Tosh Lupoy. He spent some time at Alabama. Now he's with the Atlanta Falcons. You know, his name has been linked to the Texas defensive coordinator job, or at least a position on this Sark staff. Is he still potentially a candidate? And also Jeremy Pruitt as well. I think you mentioned him a couple of minutes ago, so sorry if I'm having you repeat yourself. But, you know, there are a lot of Tennessee mods who believe that Pruitt could be losing his job. He's been the head coach there the last couple of years, and last year did not go well at all for Tennessee, and maybe there's a belief that they're going to raise the money to pay the buyout, which would make him a coaching free agent. Do you think either of those guys are options for Steve Sarkisian at this point, or is it just kind of those three that we just talked about?
I think it's those three that we just talked about. The Pruitt thing, it's odd. It just doesn't make sense for there's so many different loops and loopholes maybe that need to be jumped through in order for that to happen. So that's one. It's always been a little perplexing. Like if the other UT is about to get rid of Jeremy Pruitt for recruiting issues, it doesn't sound like a hire that our UT would be on board with, even with, you know, moving into a new era under Steve Sarkisian. So I'm kind of the sense that it's most likely going to be one of those three. Obviously, sometimes things fly out of the left field, like kind of like Terry Joseph's, you know, joining the defensive staff was. But, you know, something seems off with the Pruitt news and how that works, to where I'm still kind of just focusing on those main three.
Okay. No, I like that. That's I trust your gut on that one. All right, yeah, let's get to this James Harden topic, because I know you as a Houston sports fan have something you want to get off your chest.
Okay, so James Harden, basically, I think we've all seen and read that the franchise bent over backwards for him and did everything for him. And they asked him to do one small thing this year, which is show up and be a professional. And he couldn't do it. And I think that press conference the other night, the one that said, this isn't working anymore, I love this city, thanks. Like, that just kind of shows that he's a professional basketball player and, you know, will show up. But the Rockets didn't have any chemistry against the Lakers. And I think a lot of that falls on James Harden going through his whole antics in the offseason. Now, I think that as much as it's weird to say this, and I made this point on social media, I don't think there's any doubt that James Harden is the second best player in Rockets history. Zero. But there's no doubt that the way he exited, not only spoiling and tarnishing a lot of the good things that he did, but basically just going out like a kind of like a child, undid so much of the goodwill that he had from the city of Houston for all those years he spent, the MVP, the All-NBA teams. It kind of seems to be undone at the last possible minute. And then you factor in that his, stubbornness really restricted what the Rockets could do. I mean, this is a team that was either going to build around Harden or start all over. And finally, after basically throwing a tantrum, they realized that it was time to start over. And I'm very, very glad to see the haul that the Rockets got. I think that, you know, getting all those picks were necessary. If you're going to get rid of your franchise cornerstone, you got to get another one. And first-round picks are the way to do that. It may be tough with the Nets, considering they may be a contender for a couple of years. But you have to get them, or else, you know, you've got nothing. I mean, the Rockets had already mortgaged their future for James Harden, and getting rid of James Harden, they get back some of that future. So I'm really pleased with what they got back. I'm just kind of sad that, you know, all those great James Harden memories and the whole era, like, yeah, they didn't reach the NBA Finals. Yeah, they couldn't get past the Warriors and had that, extensive shooting slump in Game 7. But there's no doubt they played a lot of really good basketball with James Harden on the floor. And it's going to be hard to remember that. What I am going to remember is Boogie Cousins, you know, a first-year player with the Rockets, getting in his face during pregame warm-ups. It was an untenable situation that lasted too long. And unfortunately, I think it's going to affect how people view him and his time in Houston. And also, however this Nets season plays out, will also, I think, speak a little bit to what happened. So that's a team with a lot of characters up there between Kyrie and Kevin Durant and James Harden, lifetime Longhorn Jared Allen may not be dealing with that and may have gotten a raw end of a deal, but you know, I'm disappointed that so much of what was great about the James Harden era was undone probably within the last 2 months by James Harden himself. Mm-hmm. And I think if somehow, some way, the situation had been rectified and James Harden won just one championship, he'd be the best Rocket ever, in my opinion. That may be sacrilege, but like, this is a guy who has maintained an elite status within the NBA basically for as long as he's been in Houston. And I think obviously Hakeem Olajuwon was the same way. And this is probably recency bias and me being young and
it is
somewhat, just being young. But like, James Harden was doing things that nobody's ever seen do on a basketball court. But to a championship, I think a lot of that falls on him. He's a huge part of why they ever got that far. But he's a significant part of why they didn't get that far either.
Right.
And you know, you can have as many of the step back threes to beat the Warriors, you know, in Oracle right after New Year's. But you look at those and you also have Manu Ginobili blocking him in the NBA playoffs. So complicated, but, you know, looking forward to the future. Maybe Greg Brown ends up a Houston Rocket. Who knows? So, but hey, if you know of any more 6'7" Slovenians who can light it up from anywhere on the floor, please send them to the Toyota Center's way.
Yeah, you got it, man. You got it. Look, I don't think Houston fans are ever going to forgive James Harden for this. And you talked about, yeah, maybe it's different if he had won a championship down there. But look at Kawhi Leonard. I mean, I know Kawhi Leonard wasn't in San Antonio as long as James Harden was in Houston, but Kawhi Leonard won a title and won a Finals MVP, but he childishly forced his way out of San Antonio, and Spurs fans are never going to forgive that dude. And I don't think James Harden's ever going to be forgiven by the Houston Rockets unless these draft picks turn into studs and they end up winning championships and could build a dynasty with all the picks they got from James Harden. Like, best case scenario for Houston here is if this trade turns into the Celtics-Nets trade, where Boston sent KG and Paul Pierce and Ray Allen and Jason Terry to Brooklyn for a million first-round picks, and then all of those guys were huge busts in Brooklyn, and the Nets were terrible. So Boston ended up getting top five and top 10 draft picks that turned into Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown and helped them get Kyrie Irving for the year that they got him. Like, and that worked out. So that's the hope if you're Houston, obviously, is that Brooklyn, you know, those three personalities just can't mesh together. Hell, I don't know what the hell Kyrie Irving wants from life right now. I don't know if that dude's ever going to play again. Who knows if these three guys are ever going to play together. So many egos on that team in Brooklyn right now. But, man, I mean, that's it's just brutal. And what James Harden did was incredibly childish, incredibly immature. And, look, it's a sad day for Houston, but it's a sad day for the NBA. And it's a sad day for professional sports, and I say it being yesterday, right? I mean, like, we know players have a ton of power in the NBA, and they've had more power than ever before, but, like, to see that happen where a player can literally do what James Harden did and still end up where he wants to be, like, that to me is absolutely ridiculous. And like you said, the Rockets bent over backwards. They did everything for James Harden for nearly a decade. They go get Chris Paul, then they trade Paul to get Westbrook, then they trade Westbrook to get John Wall. Like, they did so much, and they basically scheduled everything around what James Harden wanted to do off the court, and this is how James Harden repays them. Like, it's just sad that players have that much power in professional sports these days, and obviously, it, you know, any chance Houston had of winning a title in the short future is gone now. So it's going to be fascinating to see how it plays out. Of course, we'll see how good Brooklyn is. They're now the favorites in the Eastern Conference. But, man, feel for Houston a little bit. Like, that's – you guys have been through a lot this year. It's only been 2 weeks. It's January 14th. But with what's going on with the Texans and the Deshaun Watson rumors, and obviously with what's happened with James Harden, it's been a rough start to 2021 for H-Town sports fans.
Yeah, that's part of it. So, you know, hopefully we're not having this conversation. I think if we did have this conversation about Deshaun Watson being moved, it would be in a far different direction and be one that would be praising Deshaun and ripping into the Texans. And,
yeah,
you know, the Rockets are certainly somewhat culpable, but this is a lot of James Harden and not Houston Rockets. So
yeah, definitely.
We'll see.
We will see. All right, man. Anything else?
I think that's about it. I'm getting ready for the Dodge Bowl and excited for that.
Yeah, man, that should be fun up there in the Metroplex. High school state championships coming up tomorrow and Saturday at Jerry World. We'll be back next week. We'll talk about that. We'll talk more about Steve Sarkisian. Hopefully he's got his coaching staff completely filled out by the next time we record. We'll get into some Texas basketball, too. Didn't have time to talk about the Horns today. They suffered their first loss in conference play last night to Texas Tech. So we'll talk about them a little bit more and maybe some NFL playoffs as well. But that's going to do it for this episode. Thank you all so much for listening. We appreciate the continued support. Follow Joe on Twitter at JosephCook89. Check out the great work that he and the crew at Inside Texas do over at InsideTexas.com. Follow them on Twitter as well. And you can follow me on Twitter at Brad Kellner and listen to the Triple Option with RBKD weekdays from 3 to 7 on the Horn and online at HornFM.com. Thanks again to our sponsors, Audiovisual Consultations and Altstadt Beer. Until next time, y'all stay safe, y'all stay healthy, and hook 'em.